Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, this is going to be a fantastic segment. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, with market outreach and development for Spark Cognition, Mr. Walt Rumpf. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Well, Walt, thank you so much for being part of the Marketing Superheroes series that we're doing right now. But before we get into marketing, can you talk a little bit about Spark Cognition? What are you guys doing for folks?
Yeah, so since I started working here, answering this question has made me cringe a little more and more. But what we are is an AI company, and we're really working to position ourselves as the world's leading AI company. In our case, I think it's much, in general, it's better to think of that A in AI as augmenting intelligence and not artificial intelligence. But I think we've seen over the past, 6 to 8 months, there's been this sort of whitewashing of companies saying, oh, we're using AI or we're doing AI. And we're led by an amazing founder who's really dedicated his life work to advancing the way that humans can interact and communicate with machines. And so, like I said, we have a lot of companies that are kind of adding in AI or using AI to solve a particular problem. We're actually working with the world's leading companies like Boeing and Verizon to build the AI that they're going to use to solve some of their own toughest problems. So that doesn't really answer what we do, but we take, at a core and a very simplified high level, we take large and large amounts of data, and that's any kind of data. And we analyze it in a way that I would say is akin to having thousands of data scientists work in conjunction with one another to then provide the insights into that data and then be able to either predict or optimize to a particular outcome or identify particular operating states or anomalies. In addition to that, we're not just kind of black boxing, giving us, give us your data, here's an answer. We actually provide you with what we call explainable AI. So telling you, okay, these are the data variables that we're seeing that are leading us to this particular outcome. That way, then a subject matter expert or a data scientist can focus more on, okay, where in the data do we have gaps, or really apply their knowledge in a particular subject matter to that area. And this is really timely because we've seen this big data revolution take place. You've seen over the past 5 years, everyone's scrambling to collect data. And now they're sitting on so much data that they have no idea what to do with it. They feel like they're wasting money. And there's really no way that a single person could analyze that. And that's why you see a lot of people scrambling to hire data science positions. But really, the only feasible way to analyze that is using the amazing computer technology and machines that we have available to us today.
Yeah, unless you figure out a way to create data scientists, it sounds like you guys you're onto something over there.
It's pretty much what we're doing, automating data science. So there's a lot of work that data scientists do that they shouldn't be doing, sorting, cleansing data. And really for us, we have three main products. One is called Spark Predict. And with that, we have a number of use cases with the industrial equipment. We're using that to predict failures that they might not have been able to previously see, or extend the lead time from a failure from a matter of hours to days, sometimes weeks. Which can really change the business model. We also have a cybersecurity product that has been able to, goes into an endpoint like your McAfee or your Kaspersky or Windows Defender. And it would be like having your own personal security analyst inside your computer analyzing every action you're doing. I think the biggest threat we have in cybersecurity these days is the end users, the people that are sitting at their computer desks, opening those email attachments from people that they don't know. And then that's leading to cause the network problems and those big kind of threats and things that we've seen.
Yeah.
The last product I kind of want to highlight that we have, and then we can kind of move on to more of the marketing topics in general, is called natural language processing. So you guys have probably seen these IBM Watson commercials.
Sure.
With people communicating and talking to machines. When you think about data, we actually think of text as data as well. It's just very, very unstructured. Our CEO sits on the advisory board for Watson, but what we've realized is that most of the data that someone needs to analyze comes from a few select places. So in the case of airplane equipment maintenance, They have, I had no idea, but they have like 900 page manuals for how to fix an airplane engine. And then in addition to that, there's another 900 page equipment parts list that they need to analyze. And then you have all these maintenance records that show how someone might have fixed those problems in the past. But when an airplane lands and there might be a particular problem that you need to fix, you really want to have a system where you can say, I'm seeing this problem, and have it tell you, okay, here's the troubleshooting that we think. And then the system's already telling you what equipment you might need to be looking at or what things you need to do to then allow you to more quickly diagnose, fix, repair, and replace that problem.
So it sounds like you got your hands full from a marketing standpoint.
Definitely.
Now, how have you seen the marketing role change over time? And maybe, yeah, let's start there and then we'll expand that into how now it aligns with sales. But how have you seen it evolve over your years in marketing?
Yeah, I think marketing is something that is somewhat circular, but also is constant. I think a lot of the things that I learned about marketing, I actually learned after I got out of college. But you know, those basic principles and of kind of the Don Draper type stuff of empathizing with your buyer and empathizing with your customer always remain true as long as you're asking yourself those core principles. But I think we see these trends come in. And when I first started, it was inbound marketing, and you saw everyone kind of rushing to make content and generate a lot of content to try to bring people inbound. And now we've definitely seen a flood of content into the marketplace where I feel like I'm reading blog posts and already in my mind thinking, all right, what are they trying to sell me? What kind of buyer journey am I going on?
Where am I on the buyer's journey?
Yeah, where am I in the buyer's journey? And I think that, you know, the one we're probably seeing now is account-based marketing. And often, you know, to go with kind of the cycles of marketing, once something starts to become mainstream, it then becomes a bad thing. We see kind of too much of it. And that's just the way the marketers in general work.
You know, but do you think that that's just the ADD of the a marketer? You know, we're always like trying to be leading edge, so we lose interest fairly quickly on one of these new things. And then, but the average person out there, that most companies, they're not leading edge. They're kind of, you know, they haven't crossed the chasm yet. They're, you know, slower to adopt some of these tactics.
I would actually say it's the ADD of the buyer. And I think that it's the way that people buy things change. And that's something that I've noticed, you know, in my entire career, in the, you know, the way that we're selling things. You know, I think that people no longer want to watch commercials. And so that, you know, kind of changes the way that a marketer has to get the message out there. I think that what people were comfortable with now, or what people are comfortable with now, they probably weren't comfortable with, you know, 6 months ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. And I think that the way that people search and try to collect information is also changing, just because there is so much, you know, once there's more information available, the way that you search Google is different. You know, instead of searching for account-based marketing, for example, I'm searching for account-based marketing for B2B enterprise sales. So you get that more long tail search in there. And then for me as a marketer, I have to figure out how to evolve to that. Also, the channels and the platforms that people go to seek out information continue to evolve. So I'm a big YouTuber, and something I'm fascinated by now is YouTube ads. And what ads are they serving to me, or what ads are being served? And I think this is something that has helped me be a good marketer and a good good with sales, is that I'm constantly putting myself in that buyer's shoes. I'm always thinking about, you know, when I watch commercial, what are they trying to do here? What is the angle, or, you know, again, where am I at the buyer's journey, or what would be the next buying step for me? And as I'm getting sold to or pitched products, understanding, you know, what is the key message here, and what's working and what's not working. I got really fascinated by inside sales when I got called one day by an SEO company trying to pitch me services. And the guy said, hey, if you are in front of your computer, which obviously I'm at work, I'm in front of my computer, you know, just go to this website. He got me on a screen share and said, I did all this research on your company before I called you. and pulled up all these stats on our website. I later found out that he just went to a website called spyfoo.com and plugged in our domain.
And as he was talking to you, right.
For me, that was an amazing buying experience. And I remember for me, it was kind of a big turning point for me and what really led me into this kind of inside sales and what I now am calling like digital sales. I think inside sales has already kind of gotten a bad rap for what it's become.
Now, how are you seeing it evolve in terms of if everybody is cynical, kind of cynical and has their guard up and has their sales radar, you know, on high, is it possible to be stealth? Is it possible to market without the person knowing in today's world, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. I think that this next wave of, you know, I think probably 2 years ago, over the last 2 years, you know, email automation and email marketing were a really, really big thing. I don't know about you guys, but I get so many emails every day that there's no way I can, you know, I need an artificial intelligence to read and sort my emails and tell me which ones I actually need to respond to, it feels like. But, you know, I think the next wave of things that we're going to see, and you're already seeing companies like AdRoll, Terminus, who you guys had on the last Marketing Superheroes podcast, evolve with these digital ads and think of, you know, I really think of those as like a digital billboard. And then I mentioned the YouTube ads, right? So, you know, marketers are going to continue to find ways to get the message out in front of people. I think what's the next thing that we're seeing, well, and what we've seen over the past year or so, is making sure that you're getting your message in front of the right people. And I think that's where the account-based marketing trend has really started to surge. Is that, you know, I don't want to have to spend $10,000 a month on a Facebook ad budget and on a Google Ads budget to get my message out and hope that someone drops into my funnel. I want to make sure that I'm targeting those ads out to, you know, companies that I know will actually use my products or roles that I need to use my products. And so, again, going back to those core principles of marketing of, you know, understanding your buyer, that's all still important. It's just, you know, how are you taking that knowledge and applying it in a new way? I think the other trend that if it hasn't already been, I think Peter, who you had on from Terminus, touched on it a little bit, was intent data. This is something that's still very nascent and still very much being worked out. But one company that you know, I would recommend marketers check out is Bombora, who's actually being integrated into a lot of other products like Discover.org, Acuity ads out there that has agreements with publishers to let publishers know which type of content they should purchase. And in exchange for giving publishers that information, the publishers are letting them know which IP addresses are looking at which, at what types of topics. And then they have information on what topics are trending. So for me, as an AI company, I'm going to want to tap into topics around machine learning, around natural language processing, around big data analytics or IoT analytics. And then if I see that a particular IP address or a particular company or someone that is cookied is looking at that type of information, that's going to allow me to then either, you know, start to target them with ads so that I can hope to get them in my funnel or get them into some more in-depth marketing. Or, you know, in fact, just reach out to them if I'm using a platform like Discover.org. I think you're also seeing companies like Rain King, who just got acquired by Discover.org, and TechTarget and IDGE, who are actually now have their own network of content, are reaching out to people and calling to verify that there's interest in the product. Now, those are very expensive types of leads to buy, but, you know, when you kind of start to factor in that time and investment, you know, I'd much rather be trying to find the 10 people I need to talk to at a particular enterprise company rather than trying to find the, you know, 1,000 people I need to market to get that one person, two person in the meeting set up for our sales team.
Now, yeah, it seems that technology is helping us identify the right people, the right firms that are interested in our service or product. How do you then take that information and create that elegant experience so that you are serving up content that is getting the result you desire? So just because you know who, you know, Bob is, that doesn't mean that you can say something to Bob to persuade him to, you know, give you the time of day.
Yeah, I think that the way that you, you know, I think that there still is a, that's why I think that content will never really die. I think finding relevant pieces of content and relevant pieces of messaging. I use this really, really cool tool. I've been on the beta team for it for 2.5 years now. It's called Crystal Nose, and that's crystal like a ball, and then nose like nose information.
Right.
And what it does is it allows you to actually plug in a person's name or go to their LinkedIn profile, and it'll analyze. It uses artificial intelligence, but we'll just at a high level, it's an artificial intelligence to analyze anything that might be available for that person as far as what they might have posted or how they post. And it has this huge Likert scale that analyzes how that person likes to communicate. Gives you information as far as, you know, do they like a lot of information, a lot of links and attachments? Do they, or do they just like a quick message? And this tool puts them into a DISC profile analysis. And then they've actually recently expanded it to give you actual email templates. So you can see whether that person, should I be suggesting specific times to that person, or should I just ask them if they're interested in meeting? Is a three sentence email better, or is it a, you know, three paragraph email? Should I use a long subject line or a short subject line? So I think, again, doing more research on that back end and understanding that person, I think also finding different ways to connect. You know, one thing that I've had a lot of success with is social selling. So if that person has a Twitter profile, I love it. You know, I'll go and people post on, you can look at who people follow on Twitter, and you can look at what they post about on Twitter, and then you can also look at their likes on Twitter to really get an idea of who that person is. And then you can maybe find that personal connection point. And then I use a tool like Crystal to then find, you know, what's going to work. You know, some people, one of my favorite hints that Crystal will give me is says, don't take yourself too seriously. Use self-deprecating humor. And I remember we had at one of my previous companies, we had a guy that wasn't responding to any of our emails, and we saw this buying signal. And me and my colleague reached out to him and said, hey, I know I'm probably seem like a scorned ex-girlfriend trying to get a date or get my stuff back, but I really just want to know, are you still interested or not? And we saw him open the email, and then we saw him respond within a matter of 5 minutes.
That's funny. And that just shows you that the power of just making it a human thing, though. It wasn't some automated response. It was you being clever and human that got the result.
Yeah. I mean, I think that with sales in particular, you have to, I think what makes sales still one of the most highest paying jobs is you have to be okay with rejection. And you have to understand that concept that you probably are going to have to go through 100 no's to get a yes. But one thing I mentioned in that last email is that we saw when he opened the email, one thing I did want to make sure that I got out there, because this is something that I preached to everyone and I recently finally got adopted within my own organization, is these email power tools and email tracking tools. So these tools are things like Yesware, HubSpot Sales, ToutApp. We use one called Cirrus Insight because it has a really, really good integration with Salesforce. And what these tools do is put a small little pixel onto an email, and then also mask any sort of links or anything that you send that person to tell you when they open your email and or if they click on something in your email. This is, to me, you know, I think 2 years ago people probably found this creepy. I think it's one of the things that people are more and more coming around to, but it's really, really valuable. I sat in on a lot of demos and initial presentations and final presentations where the person sitting across the table from me was really engaged and really, really, you know, I was like, oh, this is going to close right away. And you send them a follow-up email and they don't open it for 3 days, 5 days. They don't open it at all. And you're like, well, what happened there? But that then gives you that indication to know, okay, well, then if he hasn't opened this yet, the email that I send is going to look a little different than the email that if I, you know, I'm assuming that he did see my email and is just ignoring me.
Right.
And then it also helps me understand, you know, he's probably a busy guy. So maybe I should be asking, is there someone else I should be talking to? Or is there someone else that I can work with on this? Because it seems like he really enjoyed that meeting. Also, you know, where those things come in handy, I think for me the most is, especially in the enterprise and B2B world, is that sometimes people don't open an email for 2 weeks, but when they open that email 2 weeks later, that's when I want to pop back in. And you wouldn't know that unless you have some sort of tracking or enablement tool in place like this. But I've had a lot of success with just getting a little notification pop up that that guy I talked to 2 months ago just opened my email and clicked on a link, and then just, you know, didn't call him right away because that might be a little too close to comfort, but, you know, put on my calendar for that afternoon, call this person, and, you know, touching base. And then that's how you can, again, you know, your original question of how can you kind of get through to those people? It's about being timely, and it's about being kind of respectful of that person on the other end.
Now, with sales and marketing kind of working more arm in arm nowadays than maybe several years ago, where there might have been a more adversarial relationship, how do you see these tools kind of impacting the sales world? Are the salespeople using similar tools that the marketing people, or how are you seeing those roles kind of changing between sales and marketing?
So in our organization, and this might just be me personally, just because I'm a technology nerd and I'm, you know, really into kind of understanding how these tools work. But I think that marketing should kind of dictate the tools. And I think that there's also kind of this role that's starting to grow, at least in the B2B world, between marketing and sales. Because marketing, when you really think about it, they walk in every single day and they have a pretty much open slate of what they're supposed to do. It's, you know, what are we going to do to get people interested in our stuff? And then as you go farther, I think as you go farther down an operational scale, people have kind of more defined responsibilities and roles. But marketing, you really do. It's kind of, you're the one at the very top and you're opening up your strategy. And so at least in my experience, you know, marketing kind of dictates the tools that should be used. And then it's on to someone like me who kind of sits right in the middle to understand the tools that marketing is using, and then understand how to get sales to use them, and then drive that engagement with sales. And since I've been in selling roles before, I have this really nice perspective going back to my marketing team and saying, I know that it seems like this is something that's really, really easy for sales to do, but they're not going to do that. Right. Unless you can really show them the value and show them why it will help them close more deals, they are not really interested in doing things to, you know, help marketing, because although they should be, and it's important for sales to have a focus on the bigger picture. And I've worked with some amazing salespeople that somehow don't sleep or something to have time to do all of these things. Most salespeople are really thinking about how am I going to get that stage four deal to stage five and closed. And so you've got to figure out what, you know, what your tool does to help them get to there, or help them understand what those, you know, why we're using those tools and how it can help us help them get that next one into the pipeline or that next deal.
And then how do you help them once the deal is closed to help keep mining that deal for more opportunity? Because does that become in your organization a marketing role, or is that still a sales role? Because that's a blurring to me of the lines between sales and marketing.
So, I mean, I think there's kind of three functions now in a B2B environment. You have marketing, and then you have sales, and then you have like a customer success team. And I think that I've done some really kind of cool diagrams and things to kind of show how these people work together. It's not a Venn diagram, but we have some European people here. So I actually drew a soccer field out. Look, you know, customer success, really, they should only be hanging out by the goal, but they're on the corners and on the outsides, and they're helping you feel slip too far away.
Right.
One way or the other.
That's good sales empathy. That was good empathy on your part to kind of relate it back. Smart move.
Yeah, exactly. You know, customer success should never be back on the other side of the field. That's where marketing is.
Right.
But, you know, can stay in this analogy, sales should really be looking at everything from the midway point to the goal. And the goal is the deal, and the field is the account. So we're not just trying to go and win games 1-0. We're trying to go and win, you know, 5-0, 6-0, you know. So once we score that goal, we might run a different play or tap into a different department to get those things. I mean, with our product, we're really lucky that we have a number of use cases and we're flexible in the way that we can work. And so, you know, we might be helping someone predict a particular outcome on the equipment, but we know that we can go back to the finance department or the legal department. And that's where, again, using a tool like Terminus or using a tool like Demandware or using a tool like AdRoll and finding the ads and the messaging you can get in front. And what we've done is kind of put together some messages that say, they're very targeted, that say, you know, your company is already using, or, you know, this company is already using AI, find out how they're using it. And that's something that, you know, sometimes can generate interest. We then also use that to kind of go and prospect. And that's a really easy message to resonate. Hey, we already have a deal. You know, we're already working with this department, or we're already kind of have some use cases. I want to see if there's anything that we can do to help you get in there. And on the enterprise front, when, you know, I think that's a breaks down a major barrier when they know, oh, you've already gone through procurement, you've already done purchasing, you've already kind of gone through that. Maybe I should give this person a time of day.
Right. Now, you've mentioned account-based marketing several times. Were you always working at companies that embraced account-based marketing, or were you ever part of the initiating of account-based marketing in an organization?
I would say that I've mainly been the one driving account-based marketing, but it wasn't until my last two positions that the account-based marketing was really a tool. And what we refer to it here is kind of account-based revenue, or account-based, you know, John Miller calls it now account-based everything, because it's not just marketing and it's not just sales. It's, you know, that I think marketing, you know, going back to just the marketing, sales, and customer success, you know, everyone needs to have that goal of revenue, and everyone needs to be asking themselves, you know, what is the activity that I'm doing and how is that driving revenue? But to bring it to kind of the account based thing, I think that prior to the buzzword being actually labeled, it was, how can we don't want to have to market to 100,000 people. We want to market to that, you know, that 20% of people that we think have the highest chance of buying. So it's working with sales, it's working with customer success to understand, you know, what have we done that's working and what would be good prospects. And then, you know, what we started with when I started at Spark Cognition was kind of having the sales team, once they understood kind of what our products did, leverage their own backgrounds and their own experience from previous positions to then come up with their own list of companies and accounts that they'd be interested in going after. Well, now, 9 months later, I'm actually in the middle of this exercise right now. I'm going through and seeing which of those accounts do we have leads for? How much traction do we have in those accounts? And we're getting rid of ones that we don't have anything in.
So you just keep honing that focus, kind of getting it tighter and tighter, that kind of that final circle of what the field looks like in each of the groups you're targeting.
Yeah. And then looking at, okay, where, you know, what use case, and then for, you know, going back to how can marketing use this information? Where have we had success and how can we then further leverage that in marketing? So if we have successful use cases with companies like Boeing and with Honeywell, let's build a list of, you know, 30 companies that are like those companies, and let's start marketing use cases to those companies. And, you know, even though AI is kind of a buzzword and overused thing, I think all of these companies want to know how the top companies are using AI. And so, you know, what are ways that we can craft a messaging that might be compelling around where we've had success?
And then once you've targeted, you know, once you determine it's, you know, company A, how are you choosing the people within the organization that should see the messaging?
With that, there are some programmatic elements to it. I also have we use LinkedIn Sales Navigator, although LinkedIn continues to like put the clamps down on what you can do with it, which is much to my frustration. But I have some filters set up and we know kind of the roles that we're looking for because we're a newer technology. And, you know, I'm looking for people that have the roles innovation in their titles, or that have the role around operations or analytics, or are using certain function areas in there. But really, you know, you never really know who the mobilizer is in the company. I would say I'm a mobilizer in my company. It's, if you can't tell, I've listed a bunch of different tools and technologies that I've evaluated. I'm the person that I'm the person in our company that you might want to be going after to try to drive and get that information to a decision maker, to our COO. Our COO doesn't take a meeting with anybody, not even really investors anymore. And so it's, you know, but market outreach and development isn't really a title that someone might target.
Right. It might not be obvious. But they have to do their research and then see you on all the social media, what you're talking about, you know, the issues you're bringing up in order to really know that you're the guy in your company. They have to do kind of the legwork, the detective work.
So I'll typically, you know, I'll go onto LinkedIn and I'll start to follow a bunch of different people within the company. And then good indicators are these, you know, people that post on LinkedIn typically are the people trying to drive change agents. So once I find the, you know, 30, 40 people within a company who I think might be potential people, I then, you know, scan my LinkedIn feed, or when I'm looking at those people, I'm seeing who's posted about something recently. And, you know, fortunately with a topic like machine learning and AI, I often will find a good connection point because people are posting about these topics. And then I can either reach out to them or I can kind of put a star on them and say, that's probably the person that we want to be going after.
Right. Now for you, who are the thought leaders that you follow in marketing and sales?
A lot. I have to give a shout out to Trish Bertuzzi. She's kind of pioneered this sales development role, which I think is that role that's going to be coming between marketing and sales really, really soon. And that's going to be, you know, really responsible for demand generation and for sales development, kind of getting those leads that marketing is developing and determining which ones there might actually be opportunities from, and then setting up those initial 2 to 3 meetings for sales,
right,
to get those stage one and stage two opportunities. Before Trish, there was Aaron Ross, who really did it at Salesforce. And I read his book and when I was just starting to get an inside sales program going. John Miller, he is the founder of Engageo. He's done a really good job of building a sort of team-based platform. So you're talking about how do you get marketing and sales on the same page with these tools? His tool, Engageo, does a really good job with that. When I was more on the marketing side, I did inbound marketing was more of a thing. I was a lot more into Seth Godin. I think now that I'm in B2B tech and enterprise sales, I'm starting to try to get more knowledgeable about AI. So I'm looking at, you know, people that are thought leaders in AI, like Andrew, NG.
Walt Rumpf, right? You got a book in you?
Yeah.
You working on something for yourself?
Yeah, definitely trying to build my own brand. I think that's, again, something that takes a long, long time to go to build. But it's something that, you know, again, 100 no's to get to a yes. It's, you know, just showing that, up
sounds,
every day. And,
that sounds like a good title for a book, Walt. 100 no's to get to a yes. But I think you should. You're so passionate. I mean, it comes across that you just really love this and you're really immersed in it and you want to be the best. So, I mean, I would seriously consider writing your own book.
I think that day might come, hopefully soon.
Well, if somebody wanted to connect with you or learn more about sales cognition, where should they go?
My Twitter handle is @wall_fresh. Hoping to get that underscore removed soon, but for now it's WAL_FRESH. Yeah, seriously, my best friend works at Twitter. I email him probably every 2 months, like, hey, where are we at with this? and then I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm very, very active on LinkedIn. You know, that's one of those things that I think is now finally starting to pay dividends. But when I was in my early 20s, I used to get teased by all my friends for, like, God, you're a nerd on LinkedIn. And
who's laughing now, Walt? I think they all wish they were you now, because that's where everybody should be.
I am a pretty active and fun guy. So I, you know, if you're looking for some good laughs on Instagram and on Snapchat, I'm just @wallfresh, no underscore. There's a lot of fun things to do in Austin. I'm actually going to see Wolfpack, very good funk band, play tonight. Went to ACL Festival last weekend, going to be going again this weekend. A lot of fun stuff to do in Austin. And the weekend after that, we've got the Formula One races that I'll be trying to get my make my way out to. And so that's a way to follow me. And then sparkcognition.com. I also recommend checking Spark Cognition out on YouTube. We actually hired a full-time video person. Video is something that we're really embracing. And I think that if a marketer doesn't have a video strategy, I think also if a sales team doesn't have a video strategy, you should start looking at something like Vidyard. But checking Spark Cognition out on YouTube, we have a lot of good content there. And then, you can find Spark Cognition as well on Twitter and on YouTube.
Good stuff.
And on LinkedIn.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today. You definitely are a marketing superhero, and it was great chatting with you.
Thank you.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Our guest today, Walt Rumpf with Spark Cognition, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.